Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. I'm your host, Bill Wirtz, on this May 13th, 2021. Got an announcement to make. This podcast will be on a short break during the next 2 weeks. We will be back on with the episode 26 on June 4th. In the meantime, I recommend you re-listen to some of the old episodes we've done, or check out Yao Losowski and David Clement over at Consumer Choice Radio, which you can also find wherever you listen to podcasts. My guest this week is Chris Snowden. He's the head of lifestyle economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs in the UK and editor of the 2021 edition of the Nanny State Index. The Nanny State Index is published conjointly by the IEA and Epicenter, the European Policy Information Centre. Which European countries are the most restrictive on alcohol, tobacco, vaping or sugary drinks? You'll find out towards the end of this episode. Also in this show, illegal tobacco remains a problem and Amazon wins a major case in Luxembourg. So let's get started. Officers at the Border Guard and the National Revenue Administration in Poland foiled the smuggling of nearly 2.5 million packs of cigarettes with an estimated value of almost 8 million euros at the railway transship terminal in the Tiraspol municipality, eastern Poland, which entered the country from Belarus in three containers. This is again just to illustrate the seriousness of tobacco smuggling. Tobacco smuggling, of course, in our view, a result of increasing or decreasing, let's say, availability of tobacco products. I talked about this not too long ago on this podcast, the quasi-prohibition that we are facing when it comes to tobacco, a product that is consumed by many Europeans, but increasingly less available to many of them. In France, the government has sustained the goal of reaching a price per pack of 10 euros. It's already more than that in countries such as the UK or Norway. So many of the Nordic countries have prices like this as well. This, of course, is very expensive to compare to what we've just seen 10 years ago. And this creates a lot of revenue for the government, but it also creates a lot of hardship. I've also mentioned the smuggling and the illegal sales that go on in cities like Paris, but of course all around Europe. First of all, there's a health consequence to buying illegal cigarettes. There's a lot of quality control, of course, missing. The people who make illegal cigarettes will not be held accountable by customers. You can't really organize lawsuits if you don't really know who you're suing. So there again, with brands not being associated with it, this is a real problem and can lead to real health consequences. You can literally smoke yourself blind with fake smokes, so be careful around that. We also have to, just from the entire nanny state approach, and we'll be talking about this later with Chris Snowden, is that we should just accept that adult consumers make their own choices. People are aware that certain lifestyle choices have health consequences, but they should be free to make these choices. This is what we're all about here at the Consumer Choice Center. So yes, if you want to do things that aren't healthy, including eating a bit too much, that should be your prerogative, but also a problem that you need to take responsibility for. So when it comes to cigarettes, of course, the government says, well, we're just trying to get all of these off the market, but it doesn't really look too much at what causes this problem. What causes the problem that one in five cigarettes in France is now fake? And then, of course, we also have to look at the criminal justice implications of creating a black market. Black market cigarette dealers have been shown to contribute to the rise of international terrorism. In a 2015 report by the French Union for Industrial Production, they point to the fact that 20% of illicit cigarette sales finance international terrorism. This is according to the French Centre d'Analyse du Terrorisme in 2015. This number has been filtered out of a total of 75 international prosecutions involving large-scale counterfeiting of tobacco products. The question is, of course, here, are we willing to accept that we fund international terrorism, both in the Middle East but also in Europe, through illicit tobacco sales? Is this really the goal we should be going for? Or instead, should we not opt for the educational approach? I'm much more of a fan of the consumer protection from an education perspective rather than a punitive, a paternalistic approach, which tells you how you should live and what you should eat, drink, smoke, and whatever. Of course, if the government was actually serious about reducing the amount of people smoking, it does have a tool at its disposal, and that is e-cigarettes. And of course, the free market here has suggested us, has given us a solution that we can deal with much better than the nicotine patches and chewing gums have been in terms of effectiveness. So again, there, the government, when it is presented with an alternative, doesn't actually take the alternative, but regulates it and tries to tax it more, and which is something that we've been also arguing against on an EU level and also around the world. So the fact that customs control seizing 2.5 million packs of cigarettes is not something abnormal, that should really make us think. The last time that there was large-scale prohibition of something in a major country was in the United States with alcohol prohibition, and that really didn't go well at all. It created all types of mafia groups, including the infamous Al Capone. And I don't really think that this is something we want to produce. We don't want the Al Capones of cigarettes in Europe. And to fight that, we need to adapt the market prices of products, or at least not increase the current market prices, because otherwise the black market sales will just be so interesting, so beneficial to those who make these transactions, that it is just going to attract more and more criminals, and that is really something we should avoid. In other news then, good news for Amazon, the EU court in Luxembourg on Wednesday decided to cancel a 2017 decision from the European Commission. The European Commission being the top antitrust authority, writes the Wall Street Journal. They had ordered Amazon to pay 250 million euros in taxes to Luxembourg. Oh, hello, that's where I am right now. The latest of several big EU tax decisions to be overturned. So this being, of course, bad news for Margrethe Vestager, the European Commissioner for Competition, who keeps claiming that tax competition between EU member states are a bad thing, that some countries ought to raise taxes on companies that they haven't really asked for and that are not actually in the law of these countries. You know, you have to kind of think about this from the perspective of the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg. You know, we haven't asked for these taxes to be levied, but now the European Commission says we ought to levy them. Exactly how do you want to do that in accounting? I'm not quite sure. Of course, this comes out of the general approach of the European Commission that tax competition between EU member states are a bad thing, that they disadvantage those countries that are trying to raise a lot more through higher taxes, of course, France and Belgium being two of them. Of course, these countries also very adamant about trying to introduce harmonized tax rates in the European Union, which, of course, wouldn't mean that we would harmonize according to the Estonian standard of a flat tax system, but we would harmonize upwards in order to please those countries that are raising a lot, but also the ones that keep having increasingly high deficits and public debt. So there doesn't seem to be this correlation between having high tax rates and actually having high revenues. The Laffer curve does tell us all about that if you've ever studied basic economics. So in my view, of course, this is a very good decision by the European Court of Justice. It should, of course, be repeated. There will be continuous appeals, and I don't think the European Commission will stop appealing that. And I think eventually there needs to be some accountability on a part of the Commission. This costs a lot of money, these lawsuits that Margrethe Vestager is initiating. And of course, she doesn't have to pay for those. It's the European taxpayers that have to pay for these very expensive lawsuits against multinationals for tax money that the member states are not actually requesting. This is not a member state saying, hey, this multinational company doesn't pay its taxes. It's instead the European Commission saying, well, you should have raised more. Well, look, if you want to have this conversation about taxes, open the conversation about changing the treaties. You know, like, nobody wants to have this conversation in Europe. You know, we always talk about changing the treaties for the things that are, you know, like rights here, rights there. But nobody ever wants to go through with it because, of course, last time we had the treaty change when we tried to have the constitution in 2005 and then later had to change it, and get it through in 2009, then being called the Lisbon Treaty. That, of course, was a huge conversation. It also fueled a lot of the Eurosceptic parties all around Europe because a lot more people became aware of the EU and its capabilities. So, of course, nobody wants to have a treaty change, but they are now left with trying to use some executive power of the European Commission by claiming that there is a competition imbalance within the single market. So that it's not that Luxembourg should tax higher, but that Luxembourg creates an imbalance of competition and whatever in the single market. That, of course, not being true, because other countries have the opportunity and ability to reduce their tax rates and to create situations that make it more interesting for companies to invest in those countries. If you look at a country like Estonia, which had been under the very repressive Soviet regime and then in the 90s came out of it and made significant economic reforms, today being a tech hub in Europe, something we don't really have a lot of. And that's also because of lenient regulatory norms and low taxes. And I think this is really important, and also simple taxes, by the way, not very bureaucratic. So I think this is really something that we should change the narrative on, because the entire question of aggressive tax planning and tax havens, all of these framing words that they try to use, look, there's no tax haven unless there's also a tax hell. And we should start talking about Belgium and France and Italy as tax hells. These countries are incapable of managing their welfare states and managing their finances, even though every year they are raising more and more money for more and more people. They are incapable of managing it correctly, while other countries that raise considerably less on a per capita basis are also simultaneously the ones that manage them very well. So I think these Amazon, Apple, what is it, Starbucks cases really need to stop. It's silly. If you want a change of rules, then bring it to the table, bring it to referendums, bring the conversation to the people, and explain to people what that actually means for their economies and for the entire competitiveness of the European continent. And then we should talk about it. But the entire lawsuit thing, it's just a bit silly. But now let's move to the interview of this week. My guest is Chris Snowden, Head of Lifestyle Economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs in the UK and editor of the 2021 edition of the Nanny State Index. So Chris, you're releasing the Nanny State Index 2021. You've been doing it for a while now. What's new this year? What's happened across the continent?
Well, quite a bit, as you can imagine. There's been a lot of coronavirus restrictions, obviously, but we didn't really include those. So we're only looking at policies that are not intended to be temporary and emergencies. If we included all the lockdowns, you know, most countries would get like 100 out of 100. So we're just looking at the same old stuff to do with smoking, vaping, drinking food, soft drinks. And it's only policies that are specifically designed to deter those activities or products. And what's changed quite a lot, actually, we've slightly changed the methodology we do every year, every 2 years. One thing we've done this time is when we're looking at the affordability of various sin taxes, we're comparing the price to the median income rather than, as we did previously, per capita GDP. And that is because in places like where you are in Luxembourg, you've got a ridiculously big GDP, and people in Luxembourg are richer than average, but not quite as rich as you might guess from the GDP. And Ireland is an even more extreme example of that. People's incomes in Ireland really do not reflect their ludicrously high GDP. So we're just looking at median incomes. That's made a bit of a difference to some of the rankings. The other big thing we've changed is we've added two more countries. So we've now got Norway and Iceland in there, and they are pretty big nanny states. Norway comes top now in the new index. Finland, for the first time since we started doing this in 2016, has dropped down. It's been overtaken not only by Norway but by Lithuania. Iceland is seventh, and so all the Scandinavian countries, actually apart from Denmark, are in the top 10. The UK has slipped down to 12th, which is quite surprising. Living in the UK, it feels like we should be a bit higher than that. That's partly because the UK has frozen alcohol duty for a while, whereas quite a lot of European countries have been hiking it up quite a lot. And it's also because the UK, rather like Ireland, which is another nanny state that's just outside the top five, tends to regulate e-cigarettes in quite a sensible and relatively liberal way. But at the bottom of the table, things are very much the same as they've always been. You've got countries like Germany, Czechia, as it is now, Luxembourg, Spain, Italy are all in the bottom five, and they've always been round about that kind of area as the freest countries in our list of 30.
So when countries go up and down in that list, is it sometimes as well because some countries are improving, or is there a general trend towards more nannying?
It's almost always because other countries are worse. There's no improvement, really. Very, very rarely is there any kind of improvement. Like I say, freezing alcohol duty is like the closest you get to an improvement. Occasionally, you see countries dropping their alcohol duty. I think Latvia has done, or is it Estonia? I think Estonia, in the last few years, has had to cut alcohol duty because of cross-border trade, and there tends to be certain pressures on taxation due to cross-border shopping that lead countries to very reluctantly reduce their taxes. But far more common are big tax increases. Far more common are extensions of smoking bans, the extension of vaping to smoking bans, and the introduction of new taxes. So more and more countries are taxing sugary drinks, more taxes. There are more countries taxing e-cigarette fluid, and new policies coming up all the time. You know, so Ireland, now we've had to create a new category for what they call the booze curtain. Ireland have introduced, you know, the retail display ban for cigarettes. You know, you can't see the cigarettes behind the counter. Ireland have brought in a similar measure for alcohol. And so we've had to open up a new category. We're always doing this. We had to create a new category for minimum unit pricing for alcohol, which Ireland also introduced, as well as Scotland. It's really, unfortunately, it is one-way traffic. Everything tends to be getting worse. It's just that countries get worse at a different rate.
How do the new moves of new taxes and regulations, does that tie into the COVID-19 conversation? Are some countries doing it because they say, well, you know, COVID, you know, drinking and then being not respecting the distancing rules that's related to it, and tobacco, of course, the entire question of lungs, is that related to it, or is it the classic conversation on, well, smoking's bad for you and drinking too much is bad for you?
It's both. There have been some mainly temporary things that have been introduced supposedly to deal with COVID, which seem to have an ulterior motive. So we've seen, for example, a lot of e-cigarette shops were closed during the lockdowns, where, you know, it could be argued that these actually are essential services. In various countries, as you've seen lockdowns end, you've seen pubs allowed to reopen but not serve alcohol. You know, this is like the public health campaigner's ideal vision of what a pub should be. You know, a cafe essentially that doesn't sell alcohol. And you've had things like in Spain, or certainly parts of Spain, there was effectively an outdoor smoking ban because people had to wear masks when they're outdoors, and there wasn't the exemption for if you wanted to smoke. You know, so there was stuff like that. But what, in a way, what's more surprising is how much of the kind of the routine nanny state stuff you've seen introduced, despite the fact that there is a massive and genuine public health crisis going on. You would think some of this would be put on ice, wouldn't you, while they try to deal with a serious problem. But no, you know, the Netherlands and Denmark, for example, they've been pushing a big raft of nanny state measures, mainly aimed at smoking and vaping, but also alcohol and food as well. When you think they'd have more, you know, bigger fish to fry, Ireland is now, as we speak, pretty much pushing through minimum unit pricing. I mentioned it before, it was a proposal and it's been on the back burners for years and years, and they finally now everyone's in lockdown, decided to try and push it through. The UK has been toying with some pretty draconian measures related to food, advertising bans, telling supermarkets where they can and can't position different types of food, but it took COVID for the government to find an opportunity to exploit and introduced it off the back of actually our Prime Minister Boris Johnson going to hospital last year and him then blaming that on him being overweight.
Yeah, he did. And we talked about this on our podcast as well as the minimum unit pricing. I think we talked about that as well last week. I was curious because this already exists in parts of the UK. I think England, Scotland and Wales already have it.
No, not England, just Scotland and Wales.
Oh. And so what have you seen as to what are the consequences of this kind of regulation? Has it Has it succeeded in achieving the goals?
It's very hard to say. I mean, we've seen in 2020 a massive increase in alcohol-related deaths in England and Wales. We haven't got the figures for Scotland yet. Wales actually introduced minimum pricing during the first lockdown in April 2020, and it certainly doesn't seem to have led, certainly hasn't led to a reduction in alcohol-related deaths. There has been a big rise. It seems to be about as big as it is in England, for what it's worth. Now, COVID has kind of messed up the assessment of minimum pricing because things have gone so mad. You know, I mean, it's very sad, but it does seem like a lot of people have been drinking themselves to death under lockdown, despite the fact that you had very few of the supposed drivers of excessive drinking have been around. All the pubs have been closed, for a start. There's been very little alcohol advertising because there's been very little advertising of many goods during lockdown because there wasn't much point to it. And alcohol consumption has fallen. I mean, I don't know about where you are, but I know that in Ireland and in Britain, alcohol consumption fell a bit in 2020, and yet alcohol-related deaths have gone up. In Scotland, initially there wasn't a reduction in alcohol-related deaths, but there was a reduction the following year, which you could plausibly say might have been the result of minimum pricing. But it wasn't a massive drop. It wasn't beyond the kind of drop that we've seen before from time to time. So there certainly hasn't been a dramatic effect. There have been various studies suggesting that certainly it's had no effect on alcohol-related hospital admissions, which was one of the key things it was supposed to deal with. But it certainly has cost consumers quite a lot of money. I think in the first year it cost Scottish drinkers something like £60 million, which is not a trivial amount of money. And in Ireland it will cost them even more because the minimum price is really quite high there. It's going to be 80 cents per unit, whereas in Scotland it's about the equivalent of 60 cents a unit.
And sort of as a conclusion, you know, you've been writing about this for quite some time. Give our listeners who hear about this for the first time, the entire question of lifestyle regulations, nannying, as to like your, narrow down your objection to the approach of the government having these patchwork kind of rules to get you to act differently. How in your view, does this treat consumers? How would you describe the effect and the messaging that the government gives off by introducing these kind of measures?
Well, it penalizes consumers, to put it simply. Taxes are perhaps the most obvious way in which they do that. You know, there are discriminatory taxes. If you don't drink, you don't pay these taxes. If you do drink, you do. Now, if there are negative externalities involved, and sometimes there are, particularly in drinking, then it's fair enough. But these taxes are not Pigovian taxes in any real sense. There's no attempt to find out what the negative externality is and try and match that to the tax rate. They just keep putting the tax up and up and up because they don't want people to do these things. And it doesn't really work. I mean, that's the point. Every year since we've been doing this, and we've done it again this year, we have done a simple correlational bivariate graph showing the nanny state index score for each country against each country's life expectancy to see if there's any kind of association, and there isn't. We do the same with the nanny state index tobacco score on the smoking rate. There's no correlation. We do the same with the alcohol and the alcohol consumption. There's no correlation with any of this stuff. In fact, consistently, the only correlation we found is with GDP, which is no great surprise, but you know, the way to make societies healthier is to make them richer.
And that concludes this episode of Consumer. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow Chris Snowden on Twitter at CJSnowden or on his blog, velvetgloveironfist.blogspot.com. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz, not seeing you on Thursday, but in June. Stay safe. You have to learn.